All right, welcome back everybody to the deep dive. You know, sometimes we get really caught up in these true crime cases, you know, like a real
Oh, yeah.
whodunit. But today's case is, well, it's a little different. This one's more about the how they tried to prove it. So we're going to be diving into a West Virginia Supreme Court case. This one's from 2011, and it's the case of State v. David Wayne Kaufman.
Okay, yeah. This is a case that, it really sticks with you, because of the whole suicide versus homicide question, right in the middle of it. You have the death of Martha Kaufman, and you just don't know. And then her husband's convicted. And then the conviction gets thrown out.
And that's what we're going to be looking at. For us, it's all about the evidence,
Yeah.
specifically this concept of hearsay.
Right.
So consider this your backstage pass to understanding a super crucial part of evidence law.
Absolutely.
And this real life case is like our tour guide. It shows us how things can go wrong, even in some of the most serious cases, when the rules of evidence aren't followed really, really carefully.
Right. Yeah, and in this case, the big players, evidence-wise, are Martha Kaufman's diary. I mean, this thing was 63 pages long. And some statements she had made, outside of court. That's what the whole appeal really hinged on.
Okay, so what exactly happened? Paint us a picture. How did we end up with this whole legal mess?
Okay, so picture this. December 2007. Martha Kaufman is found dead. She's in her bedroom closet,
Oh my God.
and she's got a gunshot wound to the left side of her head.
Oh, wow.
And there's a .22 caliber pistol in her left hand.
Okay.
But here's the thing, Martha Kaufman was right-handed.
That is strange.
Right. That detail alone, it kind of makes you wonder what really happened,
For sure, yeah.
And to add to the mystery, even the medical examiner couldn't say for certain whether it was a homicide or a suicide. The physical evidence at the scene, it just wasn't clear enough.
Wow. So what else was going on in the Kaufmans' lives? Was there anything that might be relevant to this case?
Well, it seems like they were under a lot of financial stress,
Okay.
and they had life insurance policies. On top of that, Martha had a history of depression and anxiety. So yeah, there are a lot of different factors to consider here.
Okay. All right, so a lot going on. What was the prosecution's theory then? What did they think happened?
Well, they argued that David Kaufman staged his wife's suicide.
Okay.
They were convinced that he killed her and made it look like she took her own life.
But if the physical evidence wasn't conclusive, what did they use to try and convince the jury?
That's where Martha's diary and what she told her friends becomes super important.
Okay.
I mean, the prosecution really leaned on those entries from her 63-page diary. And they had friends testifying about things Martha had said to them about David,
Yeah.
like threats and abusive behavior.
So this diary and these secondhand accounts, that's what they base their case on.
Pretty much.
Okay. But then that brings us to the big legal issue. Should the trial court have allowed any of that as evidence?
Yeah, that's right. And this is where hearsay takes center stage. The defense said most of that stuff, the diary entries and those conversations with friends, they were all hearsay. And guess what? The appellate court agreed.
Okay, so for those of us who don't spend all day thinking about evidence rules, can you break down hearsay for us? Like, what is it exactly, and why isn't it allowed in court?
Sure thing. Hearsay is basically an out-of-court statement used in court to prove whatever that statement claims. It's like taking someone's word for it based on what they said somewhere else, not in the courtroom. And the court's really careful about this kind of stuff because the person who made that statement, they weren't under oath when they said it. There's no cross-examination. No one could challenge their story or see if they were telling the truth. So because of all those reliability issues, hearsay is usually not allowed unless it fits under a very specific exception.
Got it. So if they were using Martha's diary and what she told her friends to suggest David was abusive and had a reason to kill her, that sounds like hearsay, right?
Definitely.
So where did the trial court go wrong? They let all this stuff in.
Well, the West Virginia Supreme Court looked at how the trial court handled Martha's diary, and well, they found a pretty big problem. Instead of going through every single statement in that 63-page diary, they just admitted the whole thing as evidence. And the appellate court basically said, hold on, not so fast. They said the trial court messed up big time because they didn't analyze each statement. They didn't figure out if it was hearsay, if there was an exception that applied, if it was even relevant to the case, and most importantly, if letting it in would unfairly sway the jury against David Kaufman.
So just because the diary was long, it didn't automatically get a pass. They had to go through it line by line.
Exactly.
You got to think, a 63-page diary, It could be full of random thoughts and feelings, things that have nothing to do with a murder trial. And by just letting the whole thing in without looking it over carefully, the trial court totally skipped over making sure that only good evidence was presented to the jury.
And since there wasn't a lot of clear physical evidence connecting David to the crime, I'm guessing this diary became a pretty powerful part of the prosecution's argument.
Absolutely. They didn't have a smoking gun or anything like that.
Yeah.
So they used the diary and those statements Martha made to paint a picture of a bad marriage and a possible motive. They were hoping that would be enough to convince the jury that David was guilty.
So the appellate court, taking a close look at whether that diary should have been allowed in, that was really important then.
Absolutely.
So what was the West Virginia Supreme Court's reasoning for all this? I know Justice McHugh wrote the majority opinion. What were the big points he made about this kind of evidence?
Okay, so Justice McHugh was crystal clear about what trial courts need to do when they get these big, long narratives like diaries. He said they can't just treat it like one big chunk of information.
Yeah.
They have to break it down into individual statements and look at each one separately. And for every single statement, they have to do this three-part analysis.
Okay, all right, let's go through those three parts. What's the first step in this analysis?
Okay, first up, they had to do a hearsay analysis.
Right.
They gotta ask, is this an out-of-court statement being used to prove what it claims?
Mm.
If it is, then it's probably hearsay. And if it is hearsay, then they gotta figure out if any of the exceptions to the hearsay rule apply to that specific statement.
Mm.
The court mentioned Shepherd versus West Virginia as an example of where a statement might be admissible under that state of mind exception. For example, you know, if Martha wrote, "I'm really scared of David today," that might be allowed to show how she was feeling at that time, but it still has to meet other criteria.
So first you got to spot the potential hearsay and then see if there's a good legal reason to let it in, even though it's usually not allowed, right?
Yep, that's it.
Okay, what's the second part of this analysis?
Okay, the second part is all about relevance. This is where those rules of evidence, Rule 401 and 402, come in.
Right.
The court has to decide, does this statement make any of the important facts in the case more or less likely to be true?
Okay.
Basically, does it actually help prove or disprove something the jury needs to figure out?
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, they shouldn't be considering evidence that has nothing to do with the case.
Exactly.
All right, so what's the third and final step?
Okay, so the last step is weighing the probative value against the risk of unfair prejudice. And this is all about Rule 403. Here, the court's got to balance how much the statement helps prove something relevant against the danger that it might make the jury unfairly biased against the defendant.
Can you give me an example? It's hard to really picture how that balancing act works.
Sure. So imagine Martha's diary has an entry that says, "David and I had a huge fight about money." That could be relevant, you know, shows there's trouble in the marriage. But what if the diary also had really detailed and graphic descriptions of David abusing her, things that were never proven?
Hmm.
Those claims might be kind of related to their relationship, but the court has to think carefully about whether those unproven accusations would unfairly turn the jury against David.
Right.
The danger there is that the jury might convict him based on those accusations, not on actual evidence connecting him to Martha's death.
Yeah.
So in that kind of situation, the court might decide that the risk of unfair prejudice outweighs how helpful those accusations actually are to the case.
Okay. That makes it much clearer why this line-by-line analysis is so important. So based on those three parts, what did the appellate court ultimately decide about what the trial court did with the diary?
They basically said the trial court admitting that entire 63-page diary without doing this careful analysis of each statement, that was a big mistake. They called it an abuse of discretion, and they said it was such a serious error that they had to throw out David Kaufman's conviction and order a whole new trial.
Wow. Okay. And we also had a concurring opinion from Chief Justice Workman. What was her main point in that separate opinion?
Well, she agreed with the majority decision, you know, overturning the conviction.
Right.
But she wanted to highlight something really basic about the analysis.
Okay.
She said, the most important first step for the trial court is to figure out if each statement they're looking at is actually hearsay.
Right.
Only after they figure that out can they even start thinking about whether an exception to the hearsay rule applies. She was worried that in the Kaufman case, the trial court skipped over that crucial first step.
So it's like you can't even think about bending the rules if you haven't figured out if the rules even apply in the first place.
Precisely. It's a super basic principle of evidence law. And Chief Justice Workman wanted to make sure everyone understood how important it is.
So the whole case wasn't about making new laws, but about making sure the existing ones were applied correctly?
Exactly.
Okay. Zooming out a bit, what are the big takeaways from this Kaufman case? You know, for lawyers or just anyone who's interested in the law?
I think there are a few important lessons here. For trial lawyers, especially the ones defending someone, this case shows how crucial it is to object if the other side tries to bring in a whole bunch of stuff, like a diary,
mm-hmm.
without going through it carefully.
Right.
They need to push the other lawyers and the judge to look at each statement one by one and decide if it's admissible.
Okay. And what about for appellate lawyers? What are the key things they should take away from this?
Well, for them, the Kaufman case shows how important it is to keep a record of every objection they made during the trial.
Right.
It's not enough to just say objection. They have to explain exactly why they're objecting, using the rules of evidence and citing cases to support their arguments when they appeal. The defense team in Kaufman, they were successful because they kept challenging whether that evidence was admissible throughout the whole trial.
Yeah. So this case really emphasizes that even in super serious cases, like a murder trial, judges have to follow the rules of evidence. No cutting corners.
That's right.
Okay. So for our listeners, what's the most important thing to remember from our deep dive into State versus Kaufman?
The biggest takeaway is this. Courts have to follow a very specific and detailed process when they're deciding whether to allow hearsay evidence, especially if that evidence is part of a bigger story, like a diary. It's not enough to just say, okay, the whole diary is admissible. They have to look at every single statement in the diary and figure out if it's hearsay, if any exceptions apply, if it's relevant to the case, and if it could unfairly prejudice the jury. Each statement has to be judged on its own.
It really shows how important those basic rules are. It makes you think, doesn't it? We see these stories presented as evidence all the time, even outside the courtroom. How does knowing about the Kaufman case change the way you look at information presented in those stories? What might we miss if we don't take the time to break down each claim and think about whether it's reliable?
Wow, that's a really deep question. It makes you realize that these legal ideas are important for how we understand information in all sorts of situations.
Yeah, this has been a really eye-opening deep dive into State versus Kaufman. And you know what? On our next dive, we're going to look at a time when hearsay is actually allowed. It's called the excited utterance exception.
Oh, interesting.
So make sure you join us then to learn more about when those out-of-court statements can actually be used in court. Until then, thanks for diving deep with us.